better put him in the Heisman.
Got that wood right here, baby.
This is the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light Seltzer for those anytime easy drinking occasions.
They're going to run and get that boot.
The Arkansas Razorbacks have completed the dream season.
A baseball team that's on the way back. A College World Series title. The Bomb Stadium.
I almost got fired because I went Willie the Boss after I had a little too much sauce.
This is the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast.
Love for the Razorbacks, Tommy. It's nice you have a head coach that can actually get on, whether it's social media, whether it's radio shows or wherever, and he can talk about how he hasn't just had it for the last couple of years. He's had it since he was in high school and middle school and elementary school.
Well, I mean, he grew up in Northeast Oklahoma. We all know the background and the story, and Grove, Oklahoma, and coming to camps as a high school player wanting to be a Razorback. I've always tried to figure out, why did it take till, 2013 for the paths to cross? He was only here a few years, left to go to Georgia, which was a step up. I'm sure this was always your dream job. Everyone has a dream job on the biggest stage with the brightest lights that they hope to get to someday. This happened to be the one for him. You know, is he a bigger fan than some of us out there? I don't know. I'm just glad he wants the job. And when I talk to people on a regular basis and I ask them, what do you think about Sam Pittman? They offer up an opinion about the football program. One of the first things that's always brought up is, I'm just glad we got someone that wants to be here.
Ding, ding,
you know,
ding.
Just glad he, you know, and I think that goes a long ways with a lot of people that are ready to continue their support after the last 2 years of an abomination that we've had with Chad Morris. I think Chad Morris wanted to be here. He was just in over his head. We're kind of overlooking that other part because Sam Pittman's made it so clear, been so emotional that he wants the job. I want the job. He was willing to do, he stumped for it. He had former players stumping for it. He's made it clear his desire and love to be here. That's half the battle because you can translate that to recruit in that process. You can make your players know that, as he stated, I chose you. You didn't choose me. All of these things go a long way to building a program. In the end, though, all they want, fan or no fan, love for the Razorbacks, call the Hogs from your shoe tops, whatever. You got to win. You know, you mentioned Petrino. Petrino, he didn't have Razorback blood flowing through his veins, not until they started writing him checks, at least. But he won, so we didn't care. At the end of the day, I mean, Houston Nutt was just up and down, kind of a 500 coach, if you will, in a lot of ways, particularly in conference play. But he loved the Razorbacks. That carried him a little bit longer. But in the end, he didn't win enough, right, and had too much drama and all these things. In the end, winning's all that's going to matter.
That's correct.
That's why there's a, I don't know, it's not a majority, but there's a faction of the fan base out there still wants Petrino to be your coach, even though he's fallen on his face since leaving here more often than not, right? That's why he's in Springfield, Missouri, coaching right now. So, I mean, he's got issues, but he won. Winning is what's more attractive than loyalty.
I referred to the clip earlier. Here is Justin Moore on SiriusXM earlier this week talking about Sam Pittman and how Pittman is a bigger Razorback fan than he is.
People just love the guy. I met him and became friends with him years ago when he was here under Brett. You know, he and I and our wives became really good friends. And when he went to Georgia, I mean, we were obviously disappointed just because we weren't around our friends as much as we were when they were here. But still kept in contact. And anytime I was close to them, they came to the show and saw each other at random places. And so, you know, he and I have discussed it a number of times since he got the job. I was like, man, I wish you'd have let me know you wanted the job so bad. I don't know that I could have helped. But he goes, man, I didn't know it was a possibility either. He's obviously a great football coach. There's no denying that. But I tell you what I love most is he's just a bigger Razorback fan than I am.
And a little backstory on Justin Moore. His wife is from Louisiana, and that his wife's parents tried to get his daughters into LSU gear, and he was like, no, that's not flying. So
child abuse.
Great move by Justin Moore for only allowing his daughters to wear Razorback gear, and I know that you all listening love hearing stuff like that.
Clay will be with us in an hour, a little less than an hour. he wrote a really lengthy but nice piece on Sam Pittman. He spent about 45 minutes with him earlier this week. I read that whole thing this morning. It took a minute, but it was worth the read. Well, let's clay some of this stuff, because he goes in to detail with Sam about the job, but also about the staff. And I think there's some good stuff that Clay can add to this conversation, because he spent 45 minutes with Coach this week and got some good tidbits on it as well that we can talk about.
Has a description of each assistant coach on the staff, what he thinks their biggest strengths are, which is important. Talks in depth about Kendall Briles, in depth about Barry Odom. And I know a lot of you have heard a lot about those two guys because they're more notable and they've made more of a name around college football with Kendall Briles' high-flying offenses and the Barry Odom's defenses. But it'll be interesting to learn more about some of these, not lesser assistant coaches, but ones that are you haven't heard as much about.
Yeah, the word loyal was a reoccurring theme in Clay's essay. And we'll talk about that, because loyalty seems to matter a lot to Sam Pittman.
I think it's a big deal. It's a big deal in every line of
work. It should be.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Try the new Bud Light Lemonade, a premium light lager brewed with real lemonade.
Oh, he does a tightrope act. Boy, Houdini's in the house. We're at number three, and nobody's home to watch that house. Touchdown, Hogs!
A lot was made of this quote from Brad Davis a couple months ago.
The expectation level is not something that I'm, you know, unfamiliar with. The criticism is not something I'm unfamiliar with. I understand that if we don't play well, we're going to hear about it. You know what I mean? I fully anticipate it, but I also came here to kick ass, and so I'm not afraid to run it from anybody.
So, Clay, when you heard that quote, I don't know if you had your notepad handy or if you just heard it secondhand. What was your initial thoughts when you heard Brad Davis, the offensive line coach, say that?
I think he was keeping it real, and I think he knows exactly what his job is, and you know, it's they just came off a Missouri season where the offensive line excuse me, I have no cough button. But it's you know, he knows that people are going to watch the offensive line, and if they don't do well, then he'll be criticized. And that's I think that what we have is a bunch of big boys. They understand it. To be real honest, the staff last year, they understood it too. I didn't ever hear them complain about criticism that they were getting. I think they knew they deserved it. And, you know, I talked to Dustin Fry, and he told me, he says, hey, I know we're not playing well. You know, we're trying to fix it. We're shuffling guys around. And I mean, we understand some of the reasons why, but the bottom line is you got to play, you got to perform, you got to win games. That's what I make of that, is that he gets it.
And Clay, the reason I played that clip is because the word that you use to describe Brad Davis is prideful. So why do you think that's what Sam Pittman kind of used when it comes to Brad Davis as his offensive line coach?
Let's be clear. So what if, the story we're talking about is at Whole Hog Sports. You can read it now. It'll probably be a version of it will be in the newspaper tomorrow. And what I did is I sit down with Sam, and I said, I want you to give me one word on every one of your coaches. And then after he gave me that word, then I wanted him to explain it. And what he said is, he said he's a proud man, prideful. And we kind of went back and forth whether we should just say proud or prideful. And he said that he wants to be the best, has a lot of pride in wanting to be the best. He wants to be the best recruiter. He wants to be the best coach on the field. And everything that he does in his workday is to be the best. And so he has a lot of pride. That's the summation of it.
I thought some of the early writings in your essay were interesting when you compared the way Frank Broyles went about assembling the staff and trying to hire the best coach at every position possible. You even referenced Hayden Fry in a conversation you had with him. And then the comparison of what Sam Pittman has done here at Arkansas. Let's drill a little deeper in the composition of the staff and how he went about it, because as Coach Pittman laid out, he didn't really go about it with the Broyles model in mind. Clay, he put character really ahead of everything else.
Yeah, and it was his thought was that he and I this has been a two-part interview. And, I mean, I talked to him about, oh, it was 8 weeks ago. We sat down and talked, and I got into a little of that, but there were so many other things that I needed to cover that I didn't, as you say, drill it down. And so I followed up and went a little deeper. But he said that when he was a coach, his goal was not to be a head coach. It was to be the best offensive line coach in the country. And I think he accomplished that. There are a lot of people that say he was the best offense. I mean, that's what Kirby Smart said when he hired him. He went after the best offensive line coach in the country. And
what happened when he left Arkansas? You know, went way down.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think what he tried to do is, I'm going to pick out the best offensive line coach in the country, Brad Davis. That's his opinion. Best special teams coach. Without question, Georgia had the best special teams units in the country over the last several years. And he just went down the list, and, you know, I'm going to go after the best offensive coordinator that I think is available. I'm going to go after the perfect offensive coordinator in Kendall Briles. And by the way, his one word for Kendall Briles was winner.
Mm-hmm.
And he said everything he does, it is expectations to win. And he said that's the way it's always been with him, and that's his focus. And he said that he really liked that. But I think that what he did was a little different than what Coach Broyles did. Coach Broyles, but I think a lot of times Coach Broyles did the same thing. You know, like he went after Raymond Berry, who he viewed was the best wide receiver coach in the country. And Joe Gibbs, he thought, was that as far as an offensive line coach. Merv Johnson, same deal, best offensive line in the country. Merv was part of four different offensive lines that blocked for national championships. One at Arkansas, one at Notre Dame, two at Oklahoma. So you could say he probably was the best offensive line coach in the country. So that's how he put together the staff. The thing that was fascinating to me is that Sam said he made, you know, his little wish list or whatever, candidates list for each position, and without fail, he got his number ones. They all agree.
Yeah.
You know, that's impressive.
Another word that was common throughout your article when he was describing, these are Sam Pittman's words, was the word loyal. He described, I think, three different staff members, and the word he gave you was loyal. You can tell that is, and again, you're early on into your tenure when you're Sam Pittman. Everybody's loyal to this point, but it should also be noted he had two assistants that could have left for more money to other SEC schools. They got a bump in pay at Arkansas, but Brad Davis and Barry Odom stayed loyal to this staff.
Yeah, they probably could have made another $75,000 to $100,000 on top of what they were offered to stay at Arkansas, but they didn't. They didn't even bat an eye. So, you know, it's now he'll have a coach leave, and Coach Broyles did, and Coach Broyles helped guys leave. If you want to be honest about it, and if there was a guy that he didn't think, you know, fit what they were wanting to do the next year, say he decided he was going to change offenses or change schemes, he was, you know, he found those guys jobs to hire the one that he wanted. And I don't know if Sam will do that, but I'm going to guess that at some point there'll be some guys that get an offer to go somewhere, maybe it's closer to home or whatever, and that they'll, you know, he'll lose a coach. The other interesting aspect, and he, you know, what he expects from his coaches and everything, and he said, hey, it's a two-way street. They should expect a lot from me. He says, I hope I can deliver what they need from me to, you know, the head coach has got to perform just like the assistant coaches. And he said, it is a two-way street.
Yep.
And the sad part is that we should have been talking about the second scrimmage of spring.
Yeah.
That was what was on his calendar for that day we talked, and it should have been a scrimmage day, and he wouldn't have had time to talk to me until after the practice, I guess. And so instead, it was a phone interview. We were not Zooming. He says he can Zoom now. He knows he's pretty good at Zooming, FaceTiming, but I guess I'm not. So
that's a true shame, Clay.
We didn't do any Zooming.
Boy, yeah. I'm shocked by that. Yeah. Hey, yep. Do you get a sense in your conversation, do you think Sam Pittman really knows what he has with all of these guys on his staff, particularly like a Ryan Rhodes or somebody, till you get on the field, till you have a practice. I guess you've seen some of the recruiting skills and abilities, but he's got to get these coaches on the staff, just like his team. He doesn't know what he's got till he gets out there. He needs to see some of these guys coach, right?
Yeah, but see, now he's played against some of them.
Yeah.
I mean, he's played against Barry Odom. He's played against Brad Davis. He's played against Derek LeBlanc. I mean, he's you know, they're SEC guys. And then, by and large, he relies on, you know, Barry hired a couple of those guys, those defensive coaches. I guess Sam Carter was a quality control assistant at Missouri. So I think that he knows what he's got, and he's watched tape of their teams. He's seen them operate behind the scenes, you know, in meetings, and so I think he knows what. And the other thing that he said is that at this point he wouldn't, you know, he's glad he has every one of them. You know, like he said, there's some times that you're on a staff and somebody brings somebody in, and you like, you know, after a few weeks, is like, man, we didn't know this about this guy. How come he's, you know, taking all these breaks for Sonic Burgers? I mean, it's just like he's running out, and where is he? Where'd he go?
He's the head coach. He likes peppermints, I guess. Well,
yeah, whatever. Yeah,
but that's 10 years ago. Never mind.
Yeah, the idea is, so far, is that he's pleased with what he's got and sure would like to be coaching on. You know what he doesn't know? I think he knows more about his coaches than he knows about his players, and that's unfortunate. Yeah. And, you know, it's like defensively, I think they know what they want to do as far as playing a front. I think they want to play a four-man front. They don't want to play a three-man front. But they want to see Xavier Kelly and Julius Coates to see if they're exactly what they think they are. And if they are, I think you'll see them in a four-man front.
So, Clay, you talked about Frank Broyles earlier, and there's award out there for the best assistant coach in college football. And one of the things that Frank was just so good at was plucking great assistants across the board, and you mentioned some of them a little earlier. Do you think that was his biggest strength, his ability to assemble a staff?
Probably so, but I think that the other part of it was that he could coach technique at every position. And I can remember Johnny Majors telling me that, you know, that he brought him to be the defensive secondary coach from Tennessee. He had played single wing tailback at Tennessee. Well, single wing tailback is like a shotgun quarterback. That's what the single wing guy did. It's like what you saw McFadden do. You know, a tailback that's getting a direct snap, you know, 3-5 yards back. And in his second year, he said, hey, you know, he coached 64-65, the secondary coach, and then 66, he said, I want you to coach quarterbacks. You play quarterback. And he's like, well, coach, I never took a snap under center. And so Coach Broyles coached him on the techniques for taking the center snap, stance, hand position, cadence, all the things that you had to do to make it smooth. And he could do that in any position. I mean, he knew the technique for what a cornerback. And I remember Lewis Campbell telling me that Coach Broyles would come in and they would and critique cornerback play. And you know, it's like that step is not right, or this step, that first step is going to get you in trouble. I mean, he had all that in his repertoire as far as a coach. So, and you cannot minimize how good his charm in a living room to close the deal on a recruit. I mean, how good he was with the dads, how good he was with the moms, and you know that's the most important aspect of coaching, in my opinion, and Coach Broyles is really good at. So to answer your question, Ty, you name the part that's important in coaching, Coach Broyles did all of them really well.
Yeah. You mentioned that charm to close the deal. That's the one thing you hear about Sam Pittman more than anything is the relationship building, and that he is a quiet and unassuming from the outside looking in closer in recruiting, but you know, his former players is really what got him this job. If you look back at how the process went, he wanted it. His former players at Arkansas put him over the top. And it's that relationship building. You said charm with Broyles. I think that could be applied here, too.
Oh, yeah. And let's just be honest. At some point in the recruiting process, a mom or a dad or a grandma, whoever it is, whoever is the, you know, the strongest person in the family, at some point, you got to ask that person. It's just like in sales, you know, if you're trying to sell radio advertising, at some point, you got to ask for the money. And when I don't mean he's asking for money from them, but the money is that kid. And they've got to be able to say, I'm sending my son to Fayetteville because of you. And that's what it comes down to. Yeah. And Sam can do it. And when he says, I'm going to take care of your kid, the relationship is so solid that you believe it and you say, I'm not really sure where Fayetteville is. I've been there once, but there's a lot of things about Fayetteville I don't know yet, but I trust you to do it.
Yeah. And another thing,
and that's what Sam is.
Another interesting point that he made to you in the interview was he wanted coaches without a lot of ego. Now, and that sounds, well, duh, on the surface. But, you know, when you think about this college football world, it's filled with egos. I mean, a lot of industries are, but coaching's not exempt from that. And I found that an interesting thing that he pointed out and then came back and kind of doubled down at the end of your column about it was the lack of egos that he pursued and how that's actually been a dividend with parents and the comments they've made back to him.
Yeah, it's that he's turned – I mean, that's what he was looking for. And, you know, you can't have a lot of egos in the room. You got to have some listeners and you have to have some people that they're willing to, you know, to adapt to – in. When there's a good idea out there that they have to jump on board and realize it. Well, it wasn't my idea. You know, everybody wants it to be their idea, and that this room isn't like that. This coaching room, and Sam's bigger than life, and he's a big guy too. But I do not think he has an ego. I've never felt that way, and I think that's. What was fun to do, and it was my idea to do it, and he jumped in there, is I wanted to hear character traits on these coaches, and he divvied them up one by one. We went through the list, you know, all 10. Mm-hmm. And, I think that he's big on that aspect, and I think he likes what he's got. And unfortunately, you know, we hadn't been around those guys so much that I've been around Justin Stepp, and I think he nailed his thoughts on Justin in how loyal he was, and I think he called him a quality person. That's, you know, the quality in all areas, which it just kind of makes you feel like they've got a good thing going on. They've just been dealt a bad hand. You know, it's not getting to have spring practice and install their stuff. And they're going to have to, they're going to have to cut back and not really, when they do get out there, in August, hopefully, it'll be reduced. You know, they're going to pick out some things that they think they can do well and really try to polish those. And it won't be a huge, huge package, but yeah. Other thing that I've heard him talk about of late, we've spent a lot of time talking about Rakeem Boyd, and the guy that we've probably forgotten is Traylon Smith, who transferred from Arizona State. And everybody remarked how talented, how good a blocker, and how good he was at all the details when he was in spring practice. It was in fall practice when he first got to Arkansas after transferring last summer. And there may be some situations where both Boyd and Smith are in the same backfield and then one of them goes in the slot and you throw the ball to, because I think they both can catch it. So there's some little fun things about personnel that maybe we hadn't not been on our radar. I mean, we're just thinking about, okay, who's the quarterback? Well, we got Amonte Spivey is kind of flashed in the winter workouts as far as speed.
Clay, when it comes to these assistant coaches, these new assistant coaches, the ones that were previously held over from Chad Morris's staff, which do you think is going to be the biggest hire that Sam Pittman has made for this football program?
Well, Yeah, it's there's not one part of football that's more important than the other. And what I think is that he's got three different coordinators, and that was novel to me. I wasn't sure that's the way to go, but you know, maybe it's Scott Fountain. The idea, and not so much that special teams more important than offense or defense, but that's going to be important. I'm not sure it has been for a number of years. I mean, if you want to go back to Coach Brewer's, what they did well, it was they were perfect in the kicking game. Over and over, they led the country in punt returns. It's hard to do anymore. I mean, everybody's got a good punter that just punts it, hangs it up there, and you fair catch them. But just to be solid in all areas of the special teams, you can win a lot of football games if you're good at special teams. And, you know, Lord knows if you can win one game with special teams, that's going to help this bunch. Yeah. I'm not putting special teams ahead of Barry Odom or Kendall Briles, but I just think that aspect was – really, really a good decision.
And we got about a minute or so here, but I'm going to get back to defense because you touched on it earlier, and I wanted to ask you that question. There's been a lot made about the defensive formation, whether it's going to be a 3-2-6 or what it's going to be. From what I read and understand, it's really going to come down to whether you play three down linemen or four down linemen. They got to figure out what they got with Xavier Kelly and some of these other guys have transferred in. And
Julius Coates.
They got to figure out what they've got to figure whether they're going to go three or four on the front to figure out what the rest of the defense is like. Is that an accurate read on that?
Yeah, and I mean, it's going to go down to guys like, Jonathan Marshall, who I think is an anchor inside, and Isaiah Nichols. You know, what are those guys? And, it can't be just that you have four. You got to have eight because you're going to have to roll them. And do they suddenly have eight? And they haven't had eight. They haven't had three, in my estimation.
And can you control the gaps? Can you take care of a gap both sides? They haven't done that.
Yeah, poor Sosa Agim. I mean, just about the time you think, well, he's going to be a defensive end, they're like, well, we don't have enough tackles. And tackle's more important than end. And then you put him at tackle. Well, we don't have enough ends because you're losing ends. And so... Yeah, there's some questions about what they can do if they have enough players. But, you know, I think what you're going to see is be multiple. They're going to play some four. They're going to play some three. And they're going to see what they've got in the back end. And it's going to be an evolution to something.
Yeah.
I don't think we know what it's going to be. Maybe three, four games. I hope that in October we can say, hey, they've played three or four games.
Yeah.
We'll see what the evolution of it is. That sure would be fun.
A wounded duck is intercepted by Steve Atwater. Coming out of nowhere to pick that ball off was Steve Atwater. Atwater's got the interception.
Intercepted by the All-American Steve Atwater.
I don't know if he saw Atwater coming.
Boy, really gets banged back at the 14, and who else could do that but Atwater?
Welcome back into the Morning Rush. Going right to the phone lines for former Arkansas Razorback safety Steve Atwater joins us now. Steve, thanks for making some time for us this morning, man.
Oh, man, thanks for having me on. Really looking forward to it.
So, Steve, we've had some great interviews these last couple days. We've talked to Sidney Moncrief. We've talked to Anthony Lucas. Now we're getting to speak to you. And one of the things we were joking with Anthony about is he was known not only as a great football player in high school, but he was also a great basketball player. I know that you came initially to Arkansas as an option quarterback. Do you ever wonder and sit back and say, man, I wonder what it would have been like at college and the NFL that I had played quarterback at Arkansas?
You know what? I've thought about that a few times, but when I'm truly honest with myself, when I was in high school, I threw some interceptions, and when I throw the interceptions, I would go down and make the tackle. And I think that's what excited the coaches more so than my throwing was me tackling once I made through those interceptions. So I think the coaches made the right move by moving me to safety, and I fully embraced it.
When you were at Arkansas, Steve, what was probably the biggest takeaway from Ken Hatfield?
Well, I mean, just teamwork and putting in a good, honest day's work. We did that. We worked extremely hard. We had a really close-knit team there. And you know, Bobby Trott, I spent a lot more time with Bobby than with Ken. You know, Bobby Trott, he was my defensive backs coach and Fred Goldsmith, defense coordinator. But, yeah, Bobby did a great job with us just – you know, making sure we understood the defenses, and you know, Fred Goldsmith made it it was fun to play. He did a lot of fun stuff out on the field to, you know, where it just wasn't a grind every day. And, you know, I see a lot of times coaches make it so much of a grind, especially for, you know, kids when they're younger, and they make it to where kids don't even like to play football. I can say that in addition to it, it was tough, but it was still fun as well. So, that's kind of the things I took away from the coaching that, hey, work hard, but you can still have a good time.
Steve, congratulations on being selected to the Hall of Fame. I know you've been passed over a couple times. This was your year. What's the emotion been like for you and your family, and how's the old speech coming along?
Yeah, well, thank you so much. I appreciate it. Yeah, it's really an honor to be considered one of the greatest players to play the game. My number is 327th Hall of Famer. It's very, very special. And yeah, family's taking it all. We've kind of taken it all in. They were enjoying it, and really just, you know, thankful for all the people that have had a part of this throughout this journey, you know, starting back from when I was growing up in St. Louis, and then in high school, and there at Arkansas, and then on to the Broncos. And even today, we live in Colorado now, and still have some ties with the team, and I actually work for the team now. And it's such a blessing to know so many wonderful people and you know, still be in this environment.
1,074 tackles, 24 interceptions, and 168 game career. But I think a lot of people want to sum up your career with that Monday Night Football hit on Christian Okoye in 1990. I know you get asked about it a lot. I feel like our interview would be incomplete if we didn't ask about that moment. I'm sure you've talked plenty about it over the course of your retirement. Take us back, because a lot of people, I mean, when you Google Steve Atwater and big hits, that's the one that you're most remembered for, and that's the one even Shanahan said, that's the one that will define his career.
Yeah, that was the one. That was my second year in 1990, as Monday night game. And, you know, my teammate, Dennis Smith, who was really like a mentor, big brother, all that wrapped up in one. We were watching film, and he's like, hey, man, a lot of guys are going low and trying to let him go by and then jump on his back. He said, we got to hit him right up high. We're not going low. And, you know, me being a younger guy in the room, I say, okay, hey, whatever you say. And unfortunately, it worked out the way that it did. Certainly, I've talked with him before, and it didn't always turn out like that. So I was glad that on Monday Night Football, I was mic'd up, that everything turned out that way. It, you know, kind of like a Cinderella story, you know, to have it go so well, especially in that crucial situation there.
Speaking with Steve Atwater, former Arkansas Razorback, former Denver Bronco, on the Morning Rush. Steve, one of the things you did, you made playing a safety cool. Guys like Brian Dawkins, Ed Reed, Troy Polamalu, did that occur to you when you were playing, or was it really after retirement that it hit you how much of an impact you had on the safety position?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it's always like that when guys are coming up and they're watching the NFL, the guys who play well before them, they try to mimic their game. I did the same thing with Ronnie Lott. He was my guy when I was coming out, and you know, I knew him, and that was before I really knew that much about Dennis Smith. But you know, just watching Ronnie Lott play, his passion, his intensity, the speed with which he played the game, I wanted to be like that. And then I read the book that Jack Tatum wrote called The Assassin, and that really got me fired up and helped me understand, you know, if you run up in there hard enough and fast enough that, you know, a good chance you're going to come out on the good side of things. And obviously that happened like that all the time, but it increases your odds. So definitely an honor that a lot of those guys, you know, kind of looked up to me. And heck, I, like I said, I did the same thing. And I really enjoy watching them play too, the Brian Dawkins and Ed Reed and Troy Polamalu. Those guys are some of the best to ever play the game, and they, you know, they took what some of the guys before them did, me being one of them, and just hey, took it to another level. And I'm so proud of them, and hey, actually really proud to be going in with Troy Polamalu this year as a fellow inductee.
Steve, what's crazy to me about your NFL career is your second year of the league, you're named a Pro Bowler. Third year, you're named All-Pro. Were you surprised with yourself how quickly you adjusted to the NFL?
Not really, just because, you know, we ran the wishbone at Arkansas, and that required, in order to defend the wishbone, which we had to do every day in practice, you had to be able to run through crack blocks or you're going to get knocked out in practice. So I got really used to, you know, being aggressive with wide receivers when they were trying to block me. And then, you know, still taking that aggression to try and make the tackle on the running backs and that. So so the physicality was right up there. I was, you know, I think I was a little bit more prepared for that just because of the offense that we ran in college and, you know, us having to defend it. Because, yeah, you know, our guys in practice, they're coming at us full speed. And we had to defend ourselves and go on the offensive on defense. And so I think that really, really helped out.
NFL Hall of Famer Steve Atwater with us here on The Morning Rush. Steve, do you watch much college football today? And when you do, what's your thoughts when you see all of the targeting penalties and the way the game is played now? How's a guy that was known for the hard hits enjoy college football with the way it's played now?
You know what? I don't watch as much college football as I'd like to. I probably need to get better at it. But, I have noticed all the time. Same thing in the NFL, just with all the penalties and that. And my thought on it is, the only reason that they're doing it is to make the game safer, to make it to where the game can continue because of we continue to have these really bad injuries, these violent injuries to players, then, you know, parents aren't going to want their kids to play the game. And we don't want that to happen. So it's like everything else. It's constantly evolving and changing. It's a part of it. We got to be smarter in order to keep this game around for the next 100 years. So I totally understand it. It isn't as fun sometimes, but, you know, I talk to defensive backs now. When I talk to them, I try to tell them, hey, the focus has to be turnovers more so than big hits and intimidation. You got to focus on getting that ball out of that offensive player's hands and getting it back for your team. Although that was the focus back then too, but back then we could have some fun and make the crowd go crazy just over a hit too. But nowadays that's over.
You had 14 interceptions in your time at Arkansas. I think it was the potential 15th interception in that Miami game that still a lot of people remember. How close your team was to victory that day. What do you remember,
man,
about
you
that?
You had to bring that one up. that was a rough game, because I know if I would have caught that interception in the end zone, they wouldn't have been able to kick the field goal to get the win. The guys from Florida State, they were mad at me saying that, you know, I don't know how the whole conference worked down there, but they were upset that, man, you let them drop that interception, they went on to win, and then it cost us something. So, I wish I could have had that one back. You know, I had a lot of plays like that in the NFL, too, where I had an interception in Super Bowl 32 right in my hands. Brett Favre got a good read on it and ran over and had it and dropped it and like, oh, man.
Yeah. Well, you are going into the Hall of Fame as a safety, not a wide receiver. So, I mean, not really your job to catch passes.
Right, right, right. Yeah, but those would have helped, I think. I think that they certainly would have helped. But, hey, now it doesn't matter. I thought that was going to be one of the things that would hold me back, though, if I wouldn't have gotten in. I always believed that, me dropping some interceptions would have been the cause of it. But fortunately, it wasn't. And,
Steve, we're our own biggest critique when it comes to anything. Now, whatever work of life we're in, I think we're our hardest person when it comes to how we are in general.
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree with you there.
So I want to continue on with the Super Bowl conversation. Before you arrived in Denver, they had lost two straight Super Bowls. You get there in your rookie season, the following year as a sophomore, you guys lose another Super Bowl. So 3 out of 4 years, 2 of which you weren't there, you guys had lost. How did you guys respond later in the decade and end up winning two?
My first couple of years, Dan Reeves, he was our head coach, and I forget which type of offense we ran, but it wasn't a modern offense. It was a, kind of smash mouth offense. And then we had Wade Phillips. He came in. He was our head coach for a couple of years. And our offense those years, they were amazing. They scored so many points, but, defensively, we weren't as good. And, once Mike came, we kind of were able to put it all together and have it to where, we had a really explosive offense. Of course, John was there. And then, man, when we got Terrell Davis, we just took it to another level, that offense in terms of its ability to score. And then defensively, we had a bunch of great players on the defense, Neil Smith, Alfred Williams, Ray Crockett, John Mobley, Bill Romanowski, Keith Traylor. I mean, we had Darian Gordon. We had just a team full of players who had a lot of confidence, but hadn't necessarily had the success. And, when we put that all together with the great coaching staff that we had, and we all believed in the coaches, we believed in the scheme, it just seemed like everything was set up for us to win. And the only thing we had to do was go out on the field and execute. And we did that. We did a good job of holding each other accountable to make sure that we're working hard and having a good time. So it really was a special time.
Speaking with Pro Football Hall of Famer Steve Atwater here on the Morning Rush. Steve, back to the Hall of Fame question. I know Tommy referred to it a little earlier. You've been fitted for your jacket, and I know the ceremony is set for early August. The NFL draft is doing it remotely. Do you think they should push back the Hall of Fame ceremony to a later date? It's just not fair that you would give your speech through Skype. You want to do that in person.
Hey, ideally, but hey, man, I've always been one to be able to adapt to the reality. If it is what it is, we have to do it by Skype or Zoom or whatever. That'll be the way that we do it. But obviously, it's not my preference. I would love for us all to be able to get together and have a great time. But if that's not the safe thing to do at the time, then I'll adjust in whatever it needs to be. If we have to push it out a year, I don't want to do that. But hey, if we got to do that, we got to delay it. Or if we have to, do it remotely, then I'm all for it. The big thing is, hey, we're in. So the speech and all that, I'm looking forward to that and the celebration and the parade and seeing all the fans. I'm really looking forward to all that. But if for some reason it can't happen, I think they're in this instance, it's quite understandable because, people have, a lot of lives have been lost over this COVID-19, and it just wouldn't make sense to do this if that was still an issue. I'm sure you guys feel the same way about that.
Absolutely. One of the things that when you're in the Hall of Fame is you get a bust. You're forever there. I assume the smiling assassin will be smiling in the bust, or are you going to be mean mugging for this? What kind of input do you get into how that looks when it's unveiled?
Yeah, no, we do get some input on it, and this is a spectrum, and you can see different guys. You have guys with big, huge smiles, and you have guys, I think Ronnie Lott had he called it the Bobo scowl, where he looked kind of mean on his bus. But Well, for me, yeah, you're right. The smiling assassin. I have to smile. I'm not going to have just one of those big cheesy smiles, just grinning ear to ear. But I'll have a slight smile.
You like that nickname? Do you think you deserved it?
You know what? I think it fits. Yeah. Because I'm generally in a pretty good mood, and I like to have a good time. I just have a good time when I was on the field, even when. Hey, man, we may have been losing the game. You know, I'd come in the huddle, hey, guys, let's, hey, we're getting our butts kicked, but let's go down fighting, you know. let's make the most of it. I think it fits. When I first heard it, Charlie Waters first told me about it, I thought it was a little bit corny. I still think it's a little bit corny, but it's been there for a while now, so I embrace it.
Well, congratulations again on the Hall of Fame. It's an honor to call you a Razorback, and we're so glad you spent your college career in Fayetteville.
Yeah, thank you so much. And, yeah, Fayetteville, I mean, it was a great, great experience there. You know, became from a young man to a man there, and have them a great memories and appreciation for the University of Arkansas.
You're the standard. You're the standard for the position. When everyone compares someone, it's to Steve Atwater. That's the definition of Hall of Famer.
Well, hey, man, you gotta be a good person first, and you know, a lot of times the other stuff kind of take care of itself. You guys have a great day. Thank you.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Try the new Bud Light Lemonade, a light and flavorful beer for those easy drinking occasions.
The crowd's into it. They just threw him out of the game. They just threw him out of the game. He's gotten his second technical, and he's been thrown out of the ball game.
We are going to be broadcasting on 95.3, 96.3, 104.3, and hitthatline.com. The 2016 football win against TCU, that's going to occur tonight from 7 to 9, Saturday from 12 to 2, and Sunday from 2 to 4. Again, that's going to be on ESPN 95.3, Fort Smith River Valley, ESPN 104.3, Harrison Mountain Home, ESPN 96.3, Hot Springs Central Arkansas, and then as well as hitthatline.com. The times again, 7 to 9 tonight, 12 to 2 tomorrow, and 2 to 4 on Sunday. The win over TCU in overtime in 2016.
Yep, be a fun one. And as I was saying yesterday, I really appreciate IMG and Learfield IMG putting these out for stations to be able to run, and for fans to be able to listen to. I wish they could get, and I know they have a partnership with KETV. Let's go back and get some of the old stuff.
So, I can enlighten you on that. I talked to Tony Ranchero yesterday, who does camera work for KETV, a tremendous guy behind the camera, and they are actually getting that digitized KETV and the Pryor Center up in Fayetteville, sending out to Pennsylvania or something to get it digitized. And because of all this right now, the process is going to be a little longer, but they're in the process of that. Well, so it's
I'd take analog.
What's analog?
It's not digital. Just give me the reel-to-reel tape. We'll just put Paul on.
Do we have a way to play that here?
I'll figure it out. There's something out in the shed I'm sure we can pull in here.
Right, if you want to
make
that,
work.
If you want to do that, I
understand digitizing and all that. That's great. I'll take analog every now and then.
I'll be 100% lost when it comes to that. So
if I told you to load a reel-to-reel machine, you'd have no clue, would you?
I've heard multiple people, including my old professor Rick Stockdale, and some, I know Jimmy's talked to me about this. You probably have too. I mean, I don't know what I'm doing. It's like if I asked you to do something in my, like, that only my group knows how to do that you don't.
Like play Fortnite? That's about all your group knows how to do.
I'm doing a radio show right now, so I'm worth somewhat. And again, what do you always say? There's more people that are doctors than the radio host here? Is that how you say it?
That's the other way.
How do you say it?
There's more. It is that way.
There's more people that are doctors than radio.
Shut up, Kraft.
Yeah. So I think I said that right. All right. I'm looking forward to this. We don't argue often on this program because typically,
not enough, actually.
Most of the time, we agree with each other.
Which is boring.
This conversation, before we started this morning, because I told Tom we were going to talk about this, this is something we disagree on. And I'm assuming a lot of you will have a one way or another opinion on this. And if you do, 877-377-6963. You heard, if you were listening before we came on, Wingo and Golic, they led off with this morning. Jalen Green, the number one player in the ESPN recruiting class, this upcoming one, is going to the G League. Now, he is a stud. I know Jenkins clipped this clip that he is comparable to a little T-Mac and Andrew Wiggins.
Green splitting two defenders in the pretty scoop.
He just glides. Watch the long strides. First of all, he splits the trap. Big steps. Now the body control to pull up, avoid the defender. T-Mac, Andrew Wiggins, pretty good comparisons.
So what's interesting about this decision, Tommy, is the NBA is going to offer him $500,000. Initially, the incentive was $125,000, and what Adam Silver and the director of the G League decided is the $125,000 is not enough incentive for them not to go overseas to Australia,
right,
to play in China, or wherever the case may be. They want still kids, regardless if it's college or not, to play in the United States. And so now he's going to be doing this, and we'll get into kind of the more information about that. But when you heard that, when you saw this yesterday, what was your first thought when Jalen Green elected to go to the G League instead of play college basketball?
My first thought yesterday was, is this what Moses Moody is doing? That was my very first thought. Is this why Moses Moody has not signed his letter of intent? That was honestly my first thought.
Wouldn't that be quite a blow?
That you're going to lose this guy to the pros. Much like Dave Van Horn has to battle a kid he's recruited all along, put all of his time and investment in the recruiting process, and they go to the draft. They sign a major league contract. Sign a professional contract. That was my first thought on this.
And that would be something that would be, again, the most Arkansas thing ever, because you've lost.
But at least it wouldn't be to Mississippi State or Ole Miss or some team you're going to have to go out and play two times next year. Kentucky. You know, that would be a bigger kick in the midsection if it was actually to one of your conference foes.
Is Al Jefferson, and I'm forgetting there might be another player too, is Al Jefferson the only guy that you've lost straight to the NBA? Or is there another guy you can't?
I think
you had Iguodala, didn't you?
Well, he went to Arizona.
Excuse me, he
didn't go straight to, because Jefferson went to the Celtics, wasn't it?
I don't remember where he was drafted.
I think it was the Celtics.
But he did go straight to the NBA, and I think that that was one of the big misses that a lot of Arkansas fans, hey, what if he would have been an Arkansas Razorback, because he had a really rock-solid NBA career. So there hasn't been a lot of examples, I don't believe. I know he's one for sure, but I don't know if there's another one that stands out.
All right, so let's peel this onion back a little bit, because I think a lot of people, and I thought Golic and Wingo did a good job of this, and this is not something we've talked about. And honestly, I think it has been under the radar, this change in policy. Whose policy changed? The NCAA's? Or the NBA's? Who was creating this entire issue of why high school prospects, elite ones, that the 5 to 10 a year that could go straight to professional basketball somewhere? Who was the one standing in the doorway blocking that? Ty, was it the NCAA or the NBA?
The NBA.
The NBA, correct. Because a lot of people think, well, this was the NCAA has this all messed up. They got to come to school for a year, and they got to, they're being forbidden to play professionally, but because the NCAA wants to profit off of their name, like, and image, and blah, 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 and gives Jay Billis something else to bitch about. This was never the NCAA's rule. This was never the NCAA's problem. This was a problem handed to the NCAA by professional basketball. In some ways, now, there's no way to make an argument. And one thing that we will agree on here, you take the best 5 to 10, and I don't think it's going to be 15 or 20 a year, the best 5 to 10 elite athletes out of college basketball, there's no way for the sport to get better. I think we agree on that point.
Correct.
You can't take a Zion Williamson from a couple years ago and take him out of college basketball and improve Duke. They had R.J. Barrett too that same year. That'd have been two that Duke would not have had.
Also, Jones's little brother Trey Jones, and then you have what's his face? Keep going.
But not all those guys would go get $500,000 or even $125,000 in the G League.
Well, they were three. They had three of the top five players.
Right.
So they three of them would actually.
Okay.
So,
but my point is, college basketball as a whole doesn't improve. Now, this probably creates more parity and opens the door for 10 or 15 more programs to have a shot at a Final Four appearance, and it diminishes the odds for who? Duke, Kentucky, Kansas, I guess, to a degree. I mean, just a handful of programs are going to be the most affected out of this, because, again, we go back to Well, there's only 10 or 15 of these guys, so it's not like it's affecting 30 schools. So I just think it is, it actually cleans up a lot of things in college basketball, because now all the things that have been accused with Kansas and all the shoe schools, all the accusations that the FBI is allegedly investigating, the hammer's coming down, all these things with Will Wade, on and on and on. You know, when did these problems really erupt? When did these problems really become bigger problems? When the NBA forced these guys to go play for a year. And what's the NBA doing now? Well, they don't want the ball kid? He's playing over in Australia.
LaMelo.
Which one?
LaMelo.
LaMelo. He's playing. They don't want these guys going to play for $500,000 overseas and be out of their system. That's what the NBA is trying to cut off as their international competition.
Yeah.
That's it's not the, you know, it's not the NCAA they closed the door on. Now, I think where we're going to disagree is, well, who should be paying these kids? Should the colleges actually now step up and pay them to preserve the quality of their product? What should happen here? Because Jay Billis forever and a day has been telling us all how these kids are being exploited by these schools. I know they're getting free education, they get full cost of attendance, and they get everything taken care of, but they're being exploited. They need to be paid. Well, Jay, now they're getting paid. Now they have an option to stay here, not go international, and get paid. And I hear him this morning whining and moaning and complaining that, well, now the college product's going to be diminished. This isn't good for... Well, you're right, but you got exactly what you want. For everyone that's been on board with these guys getting paid, they're going to get paid.
But he wants them to be paid in the realm of college basketball.
Well, I want my cake and eat it too, but that's not the way life works.
Well, here's where we'll disagree on something. I've never been on the side of these guys should be paid. I've been on the side of that they should be allowed to market their name, image, and likeness, because as you'll point out, there's some of these guys, whether it's fringe four stars, high three stars, that are not worth that much more money. That's just how it is. But guys like a Zion Williamson, I mean, you listed the three Duke players, Cam Reddish, Zion Williamson, and then RJ Barrett. Those guys who are all top five in that recruiting class, they're limited and they're not allowed to do anything. So, again, I need to state this as clearly as possible, because everyone thinks the millennial kid on the radio show who's akin with a lot of his friends with some of the athletes on college and stuff, that he thinks that...
That has a mullet.
Yeah, that has a mullet. He thinks they should get paid. That is not what I believe in. What I believe in is they should have the opportunity, like you did, for those who went to college and for those who work in everyday business, to market themselves, market your business, and do that. And they are not allowed to do that. But if you go to school for music, or if you go to school for anything outside of sports, you're not limited.
But no one wants to, in general, no one wants to market the music major.
Music industry.
There's nothing worth marketing there at their age.
The music industry is big. I mean, there's kids that go to college and get record deals and stuff. Sure. But that's the point I'm trying to make, is that these guys,
I don't have a problem with that. You've just got to put some parameters on it. If not, it becomes a bidding war for players. Then it becomes Mega Booster over here is willing to pay more at this school than Mega Booster over at the other school. And then it just gets more slimy and greasy than ever before.
No, it's not slimy. It's just legal.
No, it gets slimy and greasy, man, because now you're bidding for players.
Okay, you bid for people who are highly marketable. Okay, they get bid for jobs.
You may want that. I don't want that in college sports.
I don't necessarily want that. But
and again, we're talking about less than 10 kids a year that are actually marketable in the sport.
See, you think that because you don't.
I mean, on a national scale. I'm talking nationally.
That's your perspective. You didn't know who Zion Williamson was until he got to school.
And I would argue no one would know who Zion Williamson was if he didn't go to damn Duke University.
This is where you're just wrong. You're 100% wrong.
I'm not wrong.
He was the most marketable high school player. Every single NBA. Just wrong.
No,
Tommy.
I'm not just wrong. He was not a household name until he got to Duke. Period. End of story.
Tommy, this is where you're 43 years old. You're just wrong.
I'm 44.
Whatever.
No. I'm talking about household name means my 65-year-old mother knows who you are. She didn't have a damn clue who Zion Williamson was when he was in high school.
This is where your age just gets in the way of your line of thinking.
This is where your lack of experience gets in the way.
Okay, here's the thing, Tommy. You can have a marketable... There are people on Instagram, people on Twitter, people on Facebook that have millions upon millions of followers that didn't go to school, that didn't do it the traditional route. That is a marketable brand. That is a huge brand.
15% of the world's on Twitter, so let's not act like the whole world's on Twitter.
But Tommy, I didn't say that,
you're saying, well, you got millions and millions of followers. That doesn't mean anything. There's 330 million people in this country. Millions of followers. I mean, it's valuable, but that doesn't mean you're a household name and the whole world knows you. You can't sit here and tell me that Zion Williamson didn't benefit from being on TV every game, every night at Duke.
Have I got on this radio station and said that?
Yes, you have. I have never said that he would be just as big a deal if he had just went straight to the G League. He would not be, Ty.
Tommy,
G League games aren't on TV as much as Duke.
That's period. Okay. You're taking words out of my mouth that I did not say. I have never said that Duke did not benefit Zion Williamson. I have said that he would be fine in the NBA and he would still make a ton of money because he would have gotten a fat shoe deal out of high school if he did. He was the highest, he was a top five player. He was the most marketable high school player since LeBron James. There's no question that. Again, you are in this mold because this is just your age group, which is fine. And a lot of our age group is listening right now is around your age and they're going to agree with you more, which is fine or whatever. When you say household name, that means you... Tommy, there's people my age that don't know who Magic Johnson is.
Well, that shame on you.
That doesn't mean he's not a household name. But your group, you're listening, know who he is, which is fine. I know who Magic Johnson is. I've spent a lot of time watching his games, researching him on that. Just because a certain faction, a certain age group doesn't know who that is... doesn't mean he's not a household name because that's your argument though. A lot of my group does not know who Magic Johnson is. So if that's your argument, because people don't know
Magic Johnson hadn't played in 25 years,
but he's a household name.
All right,
that's the exact same thing. You're making the argument that of a certain group, a certain
Magic Johnson's already made his money. He's already made his name. He's already made his fame. He's past it. Everybody has a prime, and then they have their past prime. Magic Johnson has had a much easier descent on his prime because he's stayed relevant to a greater degree.
Oh, it's very relevant, but there's still people in our group.
Trying to get relevant. How is the fastest way for a Zion Williamson to get relevant?
That's not what I'm arguing. You put words in my mouth that I did not say. I have never said on this program that Duke did not help Zion Williamson. We're getting a lot of texts, which is good. I have never said that one time, ever, because it's a straight lie. You're 100% right. I will agree with you 100%.
And I would argue Duke or Zion benefited as much or more than Duke the relationship.
So this is when we get into the argument a little more. The free education that Zion got, big deal. I get that. Big deal. Again, he was a top five pick in the number one pick in the NBA draft. He was going to be consensus top five pick regardless. This is where you have to understand. If you want to do this, you can go to mock drafts. You can look whatever. He was going to be a top five pick regardless.
I'm going to argue that.
If he went to Duke.
But whose rule stood in his way? The NCAA's, right? The NCAA forbid him to go.
The NBA did.
We both. Whose rule is that?
The National Basketball Association.
So who cheated themselves? NBA. NBA, by their rule.
I wouldn't say they cheat. I mean, they're still getting Zion Williamson.
A year later. Well, a year more wear and tear. Whose rule is... Who's Zion Williamson's not the kind of cat that's going to even go to the G League for a year anyway out of high school. Following your argument,
this rule, he'd have to, because that's what they put in place. It's this G rule argument is you get the Jalen Green gets.
I'm
fired
saying take the whole damn rule out.
Okay, then he would be picked.
He would be picked
immediately
and be playing.
And
he'd be
making a ton of money.
He would be the next LeBron as far as that path. LeBron, I guess, is one of the more famous guys that went straight. From high school, him, Kobe, those guys that went.
Kobe, KG. And right. Again, it's not for everyone. I think this is the argument that you and I are having. I don't think that every person that comes and you say 10, I would say it's probably a couple more than 10, depending if you really want to pick straws or anything. But the idea that These guys, listen, again, once again, Zion Williamson benefited from going to Duke University. I've never said anything against that on this program. Here's what he didn't benefit from. And I know that you've talked about Duke being televised, and it's a highly televised, big deal.
Every game.
It's Duke University. You think about the brotherhood that Jay Williams, Jay Billis, everyone else always talk about. That is a massive deal. But if you watch, he looks the exact same like he was in high school. He's the same, just rock. He's the same stud he was in high school. And it helps also that you're coached by a Hall of Famer in Coach K. But again, this idea that he wouldn't have been this great player without Duke is just a fallacy. It's a lie.
No one's saying that.
So where are we? Where's the argument then?
The argument is who should be paying him. The argument that you want to bring to the table...
I told you, I didn't think he should get paid by the university.
No, your argument is name like NLI, name, likeness, correct, image, and that it should just be opened up to whatever they want to negotiate. I'm just telling you, the Pandora's box that comes with that, you talk about dividing locker rooms. You talk about creating issues that coaches aren't going to be able to deal with. You talk about problems for administrators. You talk about players having no accountability. Depending on how you structure it and having caps and limits to it, it would ruin in some ways, and it would be a disadvantage to those particular locker rooms, the distraction it would create.
Listen, I agree with everything you just said, but Tommy,
then what's the problem?
What's going to happen with college basketball go when you have guys that are getting offered anywhere from 125 to 500K and your best college basketball players are leaving for the G League,
you know,
every single
happen?
Year?
What happens now? Your local fans watch, and then when the NCAA tournament comes around, everyone watches.
Well, will it or will it not be a lesser product?
Oh, there's no question. You can't argue that. Would the product have been better if Kobe and LeBron, KG, those guys all had played at least a year or two of college basketball? I mean, we're talking about under these rules, if they were around in 1992, Corliss Williamson would have probably never been a Razorback. I mean, that's to put it in terms here, we'd have never had Corliss as a Hog.
Correct.
He was one of the top prospects in the country. He'd have went straight to the G League. I don't understand why these kids need to go to the G League. If they're that good, why doesn't the NBA just let you earn your way onto a roster? If you get drafted and you get there, fine. If not, they can send you back to the G League. That's what the G League's for. I don't understand why
the
NBA...
Send a memo to Silver.
Huh?
Send a memo to Silver.
He ain't going to read my memo. I don't understand why they need this one-year requirement in their own league. All they've done, and it's smart on their behalf, is validate the G League a little bit more.
Well, what they're trying to do is, and one of the things they're helping them out is there'll be some veterans and stuff. I mean, you know as well as I do, 17- and 18-year-old kids are not ready to just get thrust in the NBA. There's very few Kobe Bryants, Kevin Garnett's, LeBron James that can just immediately have an impact on the National Basketball Association, and that's just on the floor. But you also have to look at how you grow as a man off the court.
Yep.
Doing your laundry, paying your time. I mean, there's various things that you can't just throw a high school kid.
Most 17-year-olds are not equipped to be on their own. And that's where college provides you some guidance and some mentorship, and you got a coaching staff to look after you. In the pros, they're not going to show you how to do your laundry.
I'm not going to listen.
They're not going to show you how to pay your electric bill.
The only thing that it seems like that really is stemmed in disagreement in this conversation is Zion Williamson, where he was as far as draftability, household name, and all of that. But I agree with you on that. Like, that is a big deal. Like, to go through the mentorship, to go through the things you learn in college. But a lot of these kids are just doing the one and done route. So how much can you really learn in a year?
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you came around to seeing it my way.
That's not what happened.
Your number one source of local news and information you need.
Bud Light Seltzer, 5% ABV and only 100 calories. We'd put it up against any other seltzer out there.